This is the John Gambling Show on News Talk Radio 710 WOR.
Now, with New York's only local News Talk morning radio program, here are John Gambling and Mayor Michael Bloomberg.
9 minutes after 8 o'clock. Good morning. Happy Friday, everybody. Friday means Mayor Michael Bloomberg here on the John Gambling Show, Studio 4. Good morning, sir.
Good morning. Chilly, but it's going to get warmer. Melt some more of the snow.
Yeah, I was just listening to JJ all next week, in fact.
That's good.
You can lay off even more.
You know, that's what the groundhog said, early spring. Although I think groundhog quite met this. I was in Boston yesterday and gave a speech at the Museum of Science, which is something that where I almost grew up in, and went to see my mother. And they have some live animals, one of which is a woodchuck. Woodchuck's the groundhog. Yes, right. I did not stick my fingers in the cage.
You did that once once too many times.
I don't know if I tell you a story at the zoo. When I got bit, it was because I reached in from the front to pull the animal out so everybody could see him, and he wasn't happy about that, or he or she, so he bit me. This time we get there, and they've got a brand new house. You open the door, and there's a plunger that just pushes him
just
right
out,
so you don't have to reach in.
new technology all the time.
Groundhogs seem very fine, very happy.
All right, the weather is playing havoc. We're going to start with the really mundane yet very important, yep. And that's the pothole thing. It's a mess this year. Not nobody's fault.
Well, number one, a lot of snow. Hot and cold. I love the warm weather, but it gets cold, and that makes it worse because the water expands, and when it freezes, and then pushes the asphalt apart, the plows. But also keep in mind, over the last X number of years, we have spent less on repaving roads in New York City. We just don't have the budget to do it.
And it's noticeable.
It is noticeable. And potholes, it was particularly noticeable in winter. Number one, why? Because the plows pull it up, but also you can't really fix potholes in the winter. Potholes that get repaired in the winter tend not to last because you're doing it when it's cold. So it's in the spring when you see the massive attempt to fix all the potholes. In the meantime, you do the more egregious ones because those you're going to have to do twice. And it's just, you know, once again, does it come back to the budget, everything? Well, you know, the city has to, we have to pick and choose which things you do. And everybody says, I know that, but not this thing.
I want to get back to the point that you made, though, and I think it's very important. The amount of money that has been invested or not in critical infrastructure. I drive the bridges like tens of thousands of other New Yorkers every single day. And the Williamsburg, the Brooklyn, which is being rebuilt at the moment. But, I mean, the roadways literally are falling into the river. I mean, it's just horrible. And where are we going to get the money in the short term?
Well,
to get those things
the
done.
Bridges in terms of...
We
have something like 1,400 bridges, I remember, and a lot of them are very tiny bridges, and some don't carry traffic. They carry rail or passengers or pipes or something. But our bridges are almost all up to standards. We've done a very good job. You go look at the East River. We've redone, or the Harlem River, we've redone most of those bridges. The new Willis Avenue Bridge is not quite finished, but still has a little ways to go. And then they've got a good photo op to take out the old sections of the old bridge, which are on barges, and they float them down, and then they use the recycle the metal. The Brooklyn Bridge is being redone with a lot of federal money. Remember Joe Biden, the vice president, was here. And a great photo op. But thank you, Joe. The money is great for us to have. I don't think you can count on a lot more money from Washington for a while. And if you look at the temper of the times there, it's just they're in cut, cut, cut mode. And new requests are we'll make them. And, you know, I'm sure Chuck Schumer and Kirsten Gillibrand, our congressional delegation, will work as hard as they can. But it's going to be a real uphill battle to get more money. In the end, the bridge is the problem. The roadways, but it's not dangerous.
Correct.
And that's the difference. And the roads, the bridges aren't any different than the roads. We have a problem, and there is, in the winter, you can't really fix it as well as you can in the summer. But also, it is evidence of... You can argue not making the kind of investments that we should have, except the investments that are really important are the ones that last a long time, redoing the bridges structurally. A lot of these bridges, you change the decking. Today, it's a much less weight. I remember either the Whitestone or the Throgs Neck Bridge, which is not a city bridge, a state bridge, they increased the life expectancy of the bridge by 50 years by taking up the old plating and putting in new, which weighs an awful lot less, and so the structure has to hold a lot less weight. The weight on, in a bridge is not the cars and trucks and railroad trains on it. It is the decking. That's what's hanging from these suspension cables.
They've got a great project over at the Bayonne Bridge that they're planning to start about raising the roadway so they get bigger ships underneath.
Sure, I mean, but that's part of our economy. Ed Rendell and Schwarzenegger and I started this Rebuild America organization. Rendell goes on and on about how all the Pennsylvania bridges are falling apart and needs federal money. Well, number one, I don't think the money's there at the moment. But number two, in New York City, we have reached into our pockets and we've redone all our bridges. And some of the state is helpful as well. But we've done it. And so, you know, I've always had a feeling I'm happy to help. But people complain about our expenses, and yet we get something for it. Now, some people don't think we should, but...
What do you think of as sort of a policy, the rail tunnel, the Amtrak rail tunnel that Lautenberg and Menendez are pushing, as well as the president's call and Vice President Biden, you already mentioned him, this high-speed rail, $53 billion for high-speed rail in the United States. Good idea, Biden?
Our rail is very slow whether compared to elsewhere's. There is the argument that rail is better for short distances, 300 miles, 500 miles or less. In Europe, they use, I think, 500 miles. Generally, more than 500 miles you fly. Shorter than that, you take the train. Not totally, but there are very few short-distance flights in Europe. There is the argument that it's a very expensive way to move people and that you would be better off putting the money into the highways and having dedicated bus lanes, and the buses would give you a lot more flexibility. On the other hand, Representative Micah from Florida makes a very convincing case on high-speed rail, and I've tried to support him. Whether the money is there and the will, I don't know. The other thing is that sometimes we have an objective of what we call high-speed, and it's nowhere near what they do elsewhere. When I was in China 6 months ago, they gave a big demonstration of some of the distances. They're pulling the country together with trains. Now, we have the interstate highway system, and we have a more advanced, more developed access to airplanes and lots more flights. But the trouble is that a lot of the places that aren't served by air, it wouldn't make any sense economically to serve them by high-speed rail.
And that gets back to your road issue.
The interstate highway system changed the country, the same way the Erie Canal changed the country, the same way the Transcontinental Railroad changed the country. It's harder to see how you could build enough rail to do it. You could argue that the FAA is changing the country with the access to flights. But there's a lot of places in New York State that aren't served by rail at all, don't have airports, and they want economic development, jobs for their people, for their citizens. I'm sympathetic to that, but it is a very big problem, and that's one of the things that Governor Cuomo has got to address. We want to help the rest of the state, but how do you do it without good transportation?
All right, Mr. Mayor, hang tight here. Let me take Michael Bloomberg, John Gambling, and you. Your questions, 800-321-0710, before we finish up. Uniform Services, FDNY, NYPD, and others. I talked with the Teamsters, 237, their representative and president earlier this week as well, screaming about some of the pension suggestions, alterations you want to make. They even called you a liar on the Christmas bonus thing.
Well, I don't think it's what we said was the truth. You can question how you characterize certain things. Look, I understand the unions are upset, but it's only by reforming our pension system that we're going to be able to protect reasonable and fair pensions while making sure that the police and we need on the streets, the firefighters, the sanitation workers, and teachers are there. Because of state cuts, we are looking for $1 billion in savings to preserve pensions in the long term and make sure we have the cops and teachers and firefighters we need. So we're trying to find more money for the pension system, not less, but there's no question we're going to have less coming from Albany. And I think the reforms that we're talking about are fair, and they protect pensions and the taxpayers. And, you know, I keep saying, if someone has a better way, happy to sit down and listen. But our pension costs have gone from $1.5 billion to $7 billion a year. Next year going to be $8.5 billion. And the taxpayers say, I don't want to pay anymore.
That's exactly right. Now, on the school issue, you were up in Albany earlier this week where you were testifying before the legislature. It seems to me that the governor is suggesting his plan when it comes to cutting school budgets is saying to the districts that have it, hey, you got a surplus, you deal with it. I'm going with my pledge here to cut and save the budget.
I don't think he's talking about New York City, because New York City doesn't have a surplus of education funds. Quite the contrary. We just got cut $800 million by the federal government, and we're going to have to make that up with our own city taxes.
Didn't his budget manager come out and say while you were in Albany that he thinks you have a surplus?
Yeah, well, he's wrong. I mean, the bottom line is we have been frugal. We have saved for a rainy day. But we have, number one, we have rainy days coming next year. All the experts say that the year after this budget is going to be even worse. So you can't, you have to be able to focus on that. Number two, the monies that we have aside is to pay for health care benefits for retirees and for other things. We can use some of the money if we absolutely have to. But the bottom line is the Albany has cut us by $2.1 billion in either monies that we got last year and they're giving us less, or monies that they'd promised us and we had to use in our budget, and now they say they're not going to deliver. They've cut $300 million in revenue sharing from us 100%, but only 2% for the other 57 counties. That's not equitable. And I said I'll support the governor's budget and help him, but it has to be equitable. I don't think that's equitable. They've cut $400-odd million in social services. Things that they've split the cost with us, some of which are mandates, so that if they don't pay, we still have to pay, except that now we're going to have to pay 100%. So there's that. They've cut, they say something like $650 million less aid money for education than last year. But also, we had counted on an extra $650 million. Why? Because the previous governor had committed to doing it. And we can't say, well, you know, they change and the next guy doesn't have to honor it. We have to make long-term commitments. We sign contracts and hire people and build schools and do all those kinds of things with those commitments. You just can't run a long-term operation without assuming that commitments made or commitments are going to be honored. So, you know, I still come back to, we will help the governor. We're not asking the state for more money. The revenue sharing, the 100% versus 2%, yes. Just redistribute how you cut. But we've come up with a bunch of things that would save the state, would save us a lot of money so we could live with the budget cuts, but not cost the state a dime. And if they don't do that, then we all really have a problem. And, you know, so far...
What do you mean we have a problem? The problem defined as we're going to have to lay people off. Is that right?
Well, think of it as you're going to have fewer services, fewer potholes being fixed or longer time till you get to them. But every one of these things, people say, oh, no, I want more plows in the streets. I don't know how you have more plows in the streets. We want smaller class size. I don't know how you have smaller class size. We want, more of this, more of that, more of everything. It costs money. And we have done very well. I'm going to have talked about the city budget, a preliminary budget on next Thursday. We should be very proud of what we've done. Our municipal workforce has done a great job. But the bottom line is some of our costs are just out of control, one of which, the biggest one, far and away, is pensions. That's just the 800-pound gorilla in the room. And I have said again and again and again, we should honor our commitment to our existing workforce. The variable supplement, which the police and fire are upset about, is not part of the pension system. The law says it's not part of the pension system. It's totally up to the state. It's great that we've been able to do it, but we have to decide, what do you want? And I just think if we are going to have a good pension system that's reasonable and fair to both the pensioners and the taxpayers, we've got to find savings. And we're going to depend on the governor and the assembly and the Senate to help us do that. It's got to be fair to protect everybody, those who receive the benefits and those that pay for them.
Definition of savings is just less paid out.
Yeah.
I mean, that's, you know, there's... Yeah, you got to cut the benefits.
Some things will give you savings
future
in the
benefits
long
for those coming in.
If you have a tier five, as we call it, for those we haven't hired yet, that will save in the long term, a little bit now and over the long term. If you don't do that, we're going to have this problem. Whoever succeeds, you and me, will be sitting at this table talking about that. On the other hand, we also have to, you know, write the pair bills this year. And nobody ever said that this is going to be easy at a federal level, a state level, or a city level. You can see all levels of government grappling with the problem. We're actually in much better shape than most of them.
Do you see these budgets? This is a generic question. Do you see these budgets governmentally being cut back? I mean, is that a realistic expectation?
At a federal level, it's really hard to see because they don't seem to have any interest, would be a nice word, in reducing entitlements, which means Medicare, Medicaid for them, or debt service they can't reduce, and that's two-thirds of the federal budget. They certainly don't seem to have any interest in reducing the defense budget, which is one half of the other third that's left. And then the other agencies, you know, if you want the FAA to keep the planes from smacking into each other, you got to have technology and you got to have people and management. And if you start to cut back that too much, then essential services really suffer. So it's easy to yell and scream the federal government's spending too much money. They're spending too much money on the programs you like, but not enough on the programs I like. And the only ways I'm going to get your vote, if I want my vote, my stuff, is we both agree to go along and support each other. That's the way Congress works. At a state level, they can't print money. Federal government, you may debase your currency. It may be a disaster long term, but it's a long term disaster at the moment. The dollar is strengthening. We have the only reserve currency. We're the only superpower. States, that's not true. The real problem for states is the competition of one state versus another. People can move from one state to another. You know, they do that all the time. Illinois raised their taxes enormously. The state taxes went up 70%, 60%,
60-something,
something like that. You know, Indiana and all the states right around there are. I saw Governor Christie was out there trying to lure companies from Illinois to New Jersey. That'd be a hard sell, I'm sure. More credit to him for trying. He's supposed to build commerce and business, create jobs. But a lot of those companies would be more likely to go to one of the neighboring states out there. From our point of view, we have a lot of competition on the East Coast. Florida doesn't have an income tax, doesn't have an estate tax. So the states are in a competition, as are the cities. In the end, it gets down to the cities because the cities provide most of the services. What the states do is they redistribute monies from the wealthier counties in each state to the poorer counties in each state. And that's what you see Albany doing. Albany does provide a lot of services, and the governor's talked about cutting that back. And it'll see, you know, executive proposes a budget, and then you work with the legislature. It is a democracy. And do they have the courage, or they want to keep kicking the can down the road? Every year there is the argument they can't kick the can down the road anymore. No more accounting gimmicks. This is the year they're going to face up to it.
Oh, you've heard this before, too.
But in the city, because we've worked very hard over the last 4 or 5 years, we've had 9 programs to reduce the deficit, and it's showing. If it wasn't for the state all of a sudden inequitably not earning, redistributing money, we'd be in fine shape. And we've got to work with the state to find a ways to get through. It's not totally fair to say their problems because we're all part of the state as well, but our statewide problems at a city level.
Mr. Mayor, we're going to take another break here on the half hour.
And John Gambling, Mayor Michael Bloomberg, 21 before 9, and you here at News Talk Radio 710 WOR.
I have to ask you about a subject that we talked about earlier this week, and that is kids / parents not paying for school lunches, and it seems that everybody gets a pass.
Well, we serve something like 800,000 or 900,000 meals a day in the public school system. I mean, that's why I keep saying the public school system is an enormous management job. I mean, there's a whole bunch of people, but you know, Sharon Greenberger, our chief operating officer, has got to make sure the lunches are there. And in all fairness to the city, our lunches cost us about $1.50 per lunch. And you say, okay, is that a lot or a little? Well, look at other school districts, Buffalo and Boston and Miami, each charge, I think, $2.25 for elementary school lunches and $2.50 for high school lunches. So we're doing it a lot cheaper.
And 3/4 of the students are eligible under the rules for free lunch.
Or reduced price. Now, the trouble is that more than 700 schools are currently running balances between, I don't know, you know, $100 to $20,000, something like that, for the months of September, October, and November. So we haven't got December's numbers yet. We're trying to work with the principals to see if we can get the parents to pay the freight, have them come up. But they're supposed to pay if they get lunches and don't qualify. And last year, we think it was about $7 million expense to the city. $7 million could go into the classrooms. That would take care of a lot of extra teachers and that sort of thing. And, you know, we want to keep this matter between the families and their schools, and we don't want to use collection agencies, but the bottom line is...
Lunch police.
Well, you know, and then it costs you money to police it.
I'm just making it up.
It's another one of these things. Schools really do have the most frequent opportunities to communicate with the parents. So we're saying to the principals, you please try to collect it. They say, hey, I got enough things to do, but the bottom line
is... Why not in the high schools, at least, tell Johnny no, you don't. Who has to pay, who's required to pay, you don't get lunch.
Well, it may be we get to that. It may be we get to that. But first thing is, let's try to get the parents to pay. And, you know, there's always a feeling of, you know, it's the kids. Maybe if the parents don't pay, you don't want the kids to suffer. But the real world is somebody's got to pay. Lunches don't come for free. We've tried to do a number of things, reduce the cost. We've done that with senior centers. We've combined a lot of senior centers where we had a whole staff that cooked lunch or breakfast or whatever meals they served, but there weren't very many people using it. So we combined them. A lot of yelling and screaming, but it's the only ways you can keep reducing your costs. And we keep doing that in the city. We just finished another round of cuts that cut $1.6 billion out of the budget for the second half of fiscal 11 and fiscal 12, all of fiscal 12. Fiscal 12 starts July 1st of 11. It's always complex. You got to stop them through the numbers. And, you know, every one of these things, we have for many years been willing to, or the easy road was just not collect and not push and, you know, tough times, people will come back and be able to do it. Hard.
It is hard, I know, but I think there's too many things, again, that's just my comment, there's too many things in our world where we just acquiesce and then all of a sudden it becomes an entitlement.
Because and would you tell me which ones those
well,
are?
I think
because
I
think my list
one.
Is difficult.
Kids don't get, you know, kids don't starve. They always find, I mean, you don't see too many kids
starving. One of the bigger problems with the kids is not this, it's actually that they go outside. When you try to make the food healthier, less fat, more vegetables and
fruits. Give me pizza.
Some of the kids go to the, yeah.
I mean, go to the pizza shop. Yeah. Absolutely. So New York Stock Exchange rumored to be merging with, is it Eurostar, I think?
Deutsche Exchange.
The Deutsche Exchange.
Yeah, right.
Isn't there a...
Deutsche Börse is called.
A problem there where we could lose people because they're going to merge and some people are going to lose their jobs?
The exchanges themselves have gone from employing many, many people down to employing very few.
The machines.
An exchange today, New York Stock Exchange still has one floor open. I think they used to have three. I think they're down to one, maybe one and a half or two. But very few people on the floor of the stock exchange compared to the open outcry system you had 20 years ago. Today, exchanges are computers. And what is good for New York City about this deal is we will, our biggest competitor is London. This lets us have a European presence and an American presence with the two dominant exchanges in those continents. So from a competitive point of view, we will do a lot better than London. And then the jobs you're talking about are jobs in the industries that serve the exchange or in the industries that use the exchange. And the exchanges are combining all over the world. They've been doing this for a long time. The automation has come, and the guy that runs the New York Stock Exchange has just done a masterful job. I was skeptical that they would be able to do anywhere near as well as they've done. And he's thinking ahead. The most powerful exchange in Europe is this one that the New York Stock Exchange is going to merge with. But, you know, Wall Street never lost the number of jobs. I saw another article in paper. Oh, they're all leaving. Wall Street never lost the number of jobs that everybody was predicting during the downturn and has come back faster. It comes back differently each time. But Wall Street is still an enormous engine of growth in our city and region. Some of the jobs are in New Jersey. Some of the jobs are in Connecticut. Most are in New York, in New York City and in Manhattan. But there are some in Brooklyn and Queens. And there are some in Westchester. From a regional point of view, this is a very good deal for New York. And to not do it would leave you just isolated, and the future would not be anywhere near as bright.
Because, again, because things are so electronic in the industry, it can literally be done from almost anywhere.
Well, I don't even know where the computer is, nor does anybody else. You always have these backup centers elsewhere in another part of the world, another power grid, you know, different security system. And so when you're actually, that's true of every computer you touch, you don't know where it actually takes place. It is, the other thing that is very good for America, which nobody's focusing on, is this will force a common set of accounting standards on the world. Just, it's got to happen because the American standards are better, more disclosure, not perfect as you saw.
As we've seen, yes.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Madoff didn't, I don't know why that's a different part of the exchange of regulation, but nevertheless, it certainly didn't work. But New York or American accounting standards offer much more disclosure, and this will bring Europe and give them an incentive to come towards us. And then the same thing in Asia. And I read the paper the other day: the Singapore Exchange and the one of the Australian exchanges are talking about merging. You're likely to see Europe and North America linked together. And then the natural link there would be to Latin America, because it's all pretty much a common time zone. Asia is that much further away from North and South America.
It's human interaction with.
Yeah, absolutely. You also, in order to have a great financial center, you have to be an English-speaking country, at least have a very big percentage of your people speaking English, which they do in Germany. England's obviously
South America,
because English is the business language and certainly the language of the financial business. You also have to be family-friendly, and people don't focus on that.
What do you mean by that?
If you are going to be a financial center, you've got to attract the best and the brightest from around the world. If they can't bring their families, they're not going to move there. So, you know, if you say, how do you keep New York City a financial center, keep bringing down crime, keep making the public schools better, keep supporting your culturals and cleaning your streets and those kinds of things, that is the ways to keep businesses here. Some places try to buy businesses by giving them tax breaks and incentives. In the end, I have always believed that businesses go where the labor force they need wants to live. And so our competitive advantage, New York City's, is this is safe and exciting and less expensive than other financial centers. Lots of the transportation's better, depending on where you live. So on balance, this is good. And I don't worry about, oh, they have 60% of the stock versus 40%. That's not the issue here. Having control of the exchange doesn't mean you can manipulate prices or anything. It is giving us access, and that the jobs that are outside the exchange that use the exchange and support the exchange that are going to be here.
I find this Egyptian situation fascinating to watch, and your reaction to what's going on there?
You know, anytime there's upheaval, the things that we've gotten used to, whether they're oil supplies or anything else, are in danger. You want people to be able to be in charge of their own destiny and have whatever kind of democracy they want. You'd like them to do it peacefully so they don't kill each other, and the U.S. government's always got the problem of supporting democracy, yes, supporting our allies, yes, and what do you do if our allies aren't all that democratic? And no governments, there's no easy answer to that.
All right, Mr. Mayor, let's see what the answers you have for those waiting on the telephone. We've got a full bank of phones, 800-321-0776. Before 9 o'clock, Mr. Mayor, grab your headphones. You got them right there.
Right,
you're all set to go here. We're going to start off with Steve. Steve, you've got the mayor. Go ahead. Good morning.
Hi. Good morning.
Good morning.
My question to you is this. I worked for the Board of Elections for both the primary and general election. For primary day, I was paid within 7 weeks. But for general election, what I'm being told by the supervisor of poll worker payroll is they changed the program for payment. And there's a cross-link error between the former system and the new NICE system. They processed my paperwork, from what they're telling me, the first week of January, but they're telling me also that the city has not cut the check because of this error.
Can you help this man get his money?
We will get your name and phone number. Stay on. Yeah, we've given the city has given the Board of Elections $80 million. They also for this year. They also got $85 million in federal funding. You'd think they'd have enough to pay. I don't know how much Steve made for working at the polls, but probably not with that many zeros on it. I think the Board of Elections last time we checked had paid out something like $10 million. I don't know whether there's any bureaucratic thing yet. If they submit the paperwork to us, we pay it. And whether there's a glitch or somebody just let it slip and the paper fell down behind the desk, I don't know. Steve will look at it, and you should have gotten paid. You did the job. You deserve to get paid.
Got Stu on the case. Let's go to, let's see here, line six. And Paul, Steve, good morning.
Yes. Hello, Mayor.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning. Hi, Mayor. I'm one of your teachers of 24 years.
Thank you for taking care of our kids.
Thank you very much, Mayor, and you've done a great job.
Thank you.
I'm making $100,000 a year, and it seems like you want to have more younger people in. Why don't you offer us an early retirement incentive, and me and hundreds of my friends will voluntarily go, and we'll save you hundreds of millions of dollars, and everybody will be happy, and we'll go.
It's a contract negotiation.
If you're a great teacher, I wouldn't be happy if you retired. I'd love to have you stay there. We need more great teachers, particularly teachers with 24 years of experience, and you sound like somebody that I'd like to have teaching my kid. Steve, we've looked at this, and the trouble is that the cost of the buyouts really don't save you very much money. They do the first year, but after that, they really don't. And some people say, well, the principals would like to get rid of the higher price teachers. That's not true. Principals want to have the best teachers they can. And it for their bookkeeping, the way we do this, their bookkeeping doesn't change depending on who they keep and who happens to leave voluntarily or whatever else. The principal gets credit for the compensation of the teacher, but the number we use is the average in the school, because we don't want teachers picking based on just saving money. We want teachers picking, or principals, we want principals picking on the basis of quality. So, Steve, you know, if you want to retire, I wish you'd stay, but the buyouts are probably not going to happen. We've just looked at it. It doesn't make any economic sense. But also, thank you for 24 years of service, and I know you might want to change it, but I'm happy to have you.
Danny, you've got the mayor. Go.
Good morning, Mr. Mayor.
Good morning.
About the smoking ban going into effect this May on our 14.5 miles of New York City beaches.
Yep.
I really think this one's outrageous. We can't afford to put our police department and park enforcement in that position to give tickets for smoking on the beach in open space. We need our law enforcement for real crime.
Danny, I couldn't agree more. And the police will not be enforcing this. That's not going to be their job. This is going to be enforced. Number one, this is the public. Really, the impetus, the city council came to the mayor, but the city council heard from the public. And it was the public that said, I don't like the cigarette butts in the sand and people smoking upwind. I have to breathe it. I probably wouldn't have thought about it if it wasn't for the public going to city council and city council coming to us. This is going to be enforced by public pressure. And right now, think about it. The police don't enforce. You can't smoke in a playground, for example. The new law says you can't smoke in the park, but in the playground, you've not been allowed to smoke for a long time. Police don't enforce that. You can't. There are a lot of places in public in where you get together. It's mainly in the on the beaches. There's some parks department people. But mainly it's just everybody's going to turn to you and say, hey, you shouldn't be smoking. And, you know, most people listen to that. But, you know, you're 100% right, Danny. Our cops have plenty of things to do. They've got to pick crime and terrorism-related duties first. Then you try to help with quality of life things. But that's way down the list, and the police do a great job.
All right, Harry, if you can ask your question in 10 seconds, you got to go. Go.
Top of the morning, Mr. Mayor. I just want to congratulate the city on what it's doing at the Newtown Sewer Treatment Plant in terms of renewable energy. Mr. Mayor, you need to appoint somebody as a point person for this, like you did with the social networking. You have too many agencies doing too many diverse things. I think there's a resources money to be
Harry, involved. I will ask Kaz Holloway, who's really our environmental guy. He runs Department of Environmental Protection, and see whether or not he thinks that would help. I couldn't agree more. We've got to save energy. We're part of the world. We're part of the country, state, city. It's the air we breathe, the water we drink. The less energy we have to use, the less oil we're going to have to buy, and support regimes that we're not necessarily in favor of.
All right, Mr. Mayor, that's going to do it for us. It always goes by so quickly. I'll see you next Friday.
I'm looking forward to it.
Have a wonderful weekend, my friend. Thank you very much. And stick around. There's lots more.